Hello and welcome in again to the Worship Life Podcast with Mike Harlan. This is your co-host, Brian Brown, and we're rejoining a conversation. So for those of you who are listening to the podcast today, if you haven't heard part one of the Marks of a Great Song with songwriter Dave Clark and Mike Harlan talking about the marks of a great song, you're going to want to go listen to part one first, listen to that podcast, because this one picks up right in the middle of the discussion as we continue talking about what makes a song great and what things to look out for. We're going to get to in this segment things to look out for that can keep a song from being great. So with Dave Clark, legendary songwriter, and with Mike Harlan, the discussion continues. The marks of a great song. We're going to rejoin that conversation
that's
now.
That's pretty simple.
Yeah. I'm the world's biggest Gaither fan. I've got pictures of me and him when I was a teenager. I met him, and I mean, just the impact the guy's had. But you know, my favorite Gaither lyric? It's not one you would think, but it's because of saying less with more. I am loved. I am loved. I can risk loving you for the one who
knows me best
loves me most. Gosh, you think about that.
That's a great lyric.
Which, by the way, I've noticed that particular song. There are other songs and lyrics that have come through the Gaither camp that have allusions to that one. I'm not saying they said it more than once that way, but you would. That thought is so huge that it has served other lyrics that they've written. But you're
so
exactly
I'll never
right.
write like Gaither, but I sure have studied his stuff. And another thing, I think he does in the early days, he wrote more than 3/4. He doesn't do that anymore.
Oh yeah.
Another
yeah.
thing that he does is he loves to stretch out the sound O. He touched me. Oh, he said, the king's coming. It's all through those early hits, and you go, he realized something about holding that.
I'll tell you why that is, and I'll tell writers, or at least my theory about why that is, and I'll tell writers, I can usually spot a song that a singer wrote.
Interesting.
Because singers will do that. And the reason singers will do it is because the open vowel puts the voice in the best position to have it, to show its glory.
Wow.
The open vowel. Those closed vowels are where breathing's harder. The instrument is, you're not nearly as flexible or you don't have as much room to work with in a closed vowel. But an open vowel for a longer time gives the singer the opportunity to really express.
So you and I get there a lot the same way.
Yeah.
But you've heard me sing and I've heard you sing. That's where the road divides is. I wouldn't know that.
That's really true.
I believe you, but I've heard you sing.
And I'll say singers also will, one of the things you'll spot in a singer's song, a singer-songwriter will write songs where the lyric lands on open vowels almost every time, and they'll do it instinctively. I don't think the singer-songwriter is going, oh, and I would like to land this on this note. They do it instinctively. But vowels and syllables will land in really good places when a singer writes the song.
And so a challenge for a guy like me who doesn't sing, and I have records to prove it.
You can't
sing. Is that...
you're being falsely modest.
No, I'm really not. I've heard me. A challenge for a guy like me is, can I write it through the... what I think a singer is going to want to land
on. Yeah, and I think you can, and I think you do.
And I've had to learn that.
Yeah, I think you have. There's no question.
So that's another attribute. I like a great song is one that there's a story behind it, but you're not going to know what it is when you hear the song because it's going to take you to your story.
Yeah, and that's another key is those universal things.
Yes, I want you to feel what I felt. I don't want you to live what I lived.
Yeah,
I
love the way you're saying
it. Say it.
So all of those
I need to remember that.
Relatable.
That's a great way
to say that.
I need to write that.
I want you to feel what I felt without having to live what I've lived.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great way to say it.
Yeah, it is a great way
and
to say it.
And songwriters need to remember
that. I think he got that from me.
We get to where we want to tell our story and instead of communicate our experience, really. And that's a real nuance.
And I would tell any songwriter out there to build off that theme is that if your song doesn't say something that can exist outside of your story, you're not finished writing the song yet.
Yeah,
you've got to go back and get something a little clearer or a little more descriptive or something because one of the worst things can happen is a songwriter that writes a song, but before I sing this, I have to tell you what it means, because you'll never get it.
A lot of them do anyway.
A lot of them do anyway, and that's another pet peeve.
Comedians have that figured out. The funniest comedy is something that's relatable to everybody in the room. Yeah. So an experience we can all relate to.
And maybe perhaps the funniest comedy of all is when the listener puts their own punchline
into
it.
Right.
And a song, and of course we're getting into worship flow now, but a song should move the listener to a conclusion that God's Spirit comes and makes in their heart. You make the point, but you don't have to. You have a starting place, an ending place, but you have to rely on in the body of worship. You have to rely on what follows it, and all of it work together, instead of feeling like every song. And this is the point to make to songwriters. And songwriters need to be careful that their songs aren't trying to say everything that could possibly be said about that, but lead the listener to the place where they will start hearing things that could also be said or also be applied.
And I think we could also do a whole podcast about the opposite of what makes a song not great. You know, and we have reached a point in our technology and, unfortunately, our worship where we can manipulate all those things and take you to places that we want to take you and miss out on where God wanted to lead you.
There's no question that an incredible performance can hide a mediocre song.
Absolutely.
There's no question.
Well, Keith Getty talks about an incredible melody can hide a very poor lyric.
Yeah.
And the importance of the melody being right, because a poor melody can also make sure that a fantastic lyric is never heard.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is never heard.
Yeah.
So years ago, for a quick story.
Please do.
So at the old Benson Company, there were always writers in and out of there. You never knew who was going to be there on a certain day. And I had a little writer's room that didn't have a piano, because I'm a lyric guy.
Yeah.
I had a little tiny desk in a corner and two chairs.
Broom closet is what you, broom closet. Yeah.
You were there. Absolutely. So I go down one day and there were no names on the door, but I knocked on the, I saw it was shut, so I knew somebody, and I knocked on the door and I peeked in. And it was Greg Nelson and Steve Green.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that was a day and time when you felt like you just walked in on Elvis and Johnny Cash.
High cotton.
And I said, I'm sorry, guys. I wanted to meet him. I wanted to write with him. But, I was a young kid. And I said, I'm sorry, I didn't. And they said, oh, is this your room? I said, yes. But I said, there are other rooms here with pianos. And Greg said, well, what are you working on? I said, working on a melody. I said, there are other rooms here with pianos. He said, well, a great melody doesn't need a piano. He said, in fact, sometimes a piano, you'll go to familiar chords, to familiar places.
Oh, yeah.
And they were sitting there writing a melody.
Wow.
I think I should have gotten a piece of the pie. They were in my room.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it wasn't dependent on the keyboard. It was dependent on the structure of the melody.
Yeah.
And that's another little thing you file away and go, I'll remember that when I'm Greg Nelson's
age. You know what? He had a birthday.
I hope Greg's listening. Yeah.
Why I said that.
You know, interestingly enough, you've made a point in that story that I've thought of too, and that is that I've got to get outside of myself a little bit, or everything I do will start sounding like me.
Right.
And those great writers are the ones that have that ability to get away from the pocket of their familiarity and even go to those places where it's unusual.
Right. I've heard a statement made one time I'd like you guys to comment on, Mike, and your comments made me think of it, is the difference between someone who's written a great song and someone who's a great songwriter.
Yeah.
I think sometimes writing a great song early in your songwriting career can really, in some ways, hurt you because you feel like you don't have to work on the craft.
Right.
You've just got some sort of innate thing, and people get stuck. And that's so. Do you find that true, that there's a difference between a great songwriter and a person who's written a great song? Is that a fair analysis?
Our era, where there's more co-writing going on, you can be part of a great song and still not be much of a writer.
Yeah, it's true.
And I hate to say it that way. When I first moved
For those of you that hurt.
Well, but you've seen it.
Yeah,
and you know what?
I'll be okay. Hang on.
Artists are famous. You know, artists are famous for that. Give me a quarter of the song, and they had little to nothing to do
with
it.
That's another two-part podcast.
Yeah. Or an artist might say to a team of writers, I'd like a song that is about this, and then the writers go write it, and the artist be considered one of the writers.
But you know what? They we would not have written it without their input.
Without their idea. So that scale, you know, years ago.
It's about input.
Exactly.
More than
and that
contribution.
One word might be worth the rest of it. But
agreed.
Back in the day, I cut my teeth at the knee of Niles Borup, who was one of the great lyricists of Christian music back then. And learning that craft of collaborating and how that works with multiple people was quite a journey for me. And I would have, starting that process, did not know how far I had to go.
Right.
Didn't really know that I had a lot of learning to do. And that's kind of leads me back to a question I had of you. You were talking about those 9 years, those early years, and how much growing you had to do. When you look back on that, Dave, what were some of the early signs of a Dave Clark song that as you aged and matured and developed, you began to not do that maybe the early songs? If we could look at some of those first few years, what would we see there that wouldn't be in a song you'd write now?
I probably forced more rhymes.
Yeah, it's a big one. I see.
I heard Ann Murray's song the other day, Danny's song, and it was like in one line. It was a great song, great writer, but in one line, they had freeze a dove. You know, they had love above, sign from above, freeze a dove. It was like, well, you shout all those in one line, can't go back
there.
What else you got? What else you got?
And, rhyming dictionary. Yeah.
The older I get, the more I love the hunt of finding something that settles on the listener's ear as if it were a rhyme, and it may not be. Now,
you know, one of the songs from our musical that I was talking about earlier, the musical called One Noel, that's from Littleness This Year. See that plug?
That was subtle. Written by Mike Harlan.
All right, so I saw that attribute of yours at play when we wrote the song Now All Is Well. I remember this process, and I remember making a mental note at the time with Cliff at the keyboard and me and you around the piano, and we're writing this song. And I remember getting to a place lyrically where it was good, and yet you kept pushing. You kept saying, no, there's something better. And if we had the lyric in front of you, I could say that stanza right there. There's a phrase that we fought for. I don't even remember if you remember this moment, but you really were the one fighting for it for probably 30 minutes or 45 minutes looking at this one little, and there's something, and you just insisted, and Cliff and I, without you knowing it, rolling our eyes at each other, and you kept pushing us, and finally when the line that is now in the song came out, we went, oh, okay, that's what it should
be
right there.
I think that's one of the biggest separators between good writing and great writing. And again, I'm not saying we're great writers all the time. We're reaching for that mark.
Yeah.
But so many writers settle for good enough.
Yep.
It's that works.
That works.
And if everybody agrees on it, it must be right. And I'm going, you know what? What if there's more? What if good is not good enough? Let's not settle for good if there's a chance we can get to great.
I think that is the difference. We talk about this podcast being the marks of a great song.
Yeah.
Some of those are observable, that you could actually look at that and say, that makes that great. Many of them are much more subtle than that, and you wouldn't necessarily, just like that couplet, you wouldn't necessarily know immediately why that's amazing, but then as you begin to study, you begin to say, oh, okay, the simplicity of it, the fact that it uses three words but says something that's so profound to ponder, all those things. Some of this may be nuanced, kind of subjective or more implied brilliance than what is conspicuously observable. And yet, isn't that what we're aiming for? So maybe the lesson that the takeaway for me, just listening to us talk about this, is to watch out for those that tendency to go, that's good enough. And or that'll work, that'll do. When there could be something just beyond that that's so much better, that locks in. Maybe the most important phrase of any song is the next one that you are reaching for to lock in something.
And there's another danger in, again, I talk about our current climate, because you and I have both seen the writing process of the business change. Not the actual writing, but the business approach to it. The writers are... I get caught in this myself, and it always scares me. We have a 10 o'clock, and we have a 2 o'clock, and we have lunch in between, and it may be with two different writers, two different ideas. And so there's a tendency to think we got to finish this before lunch because we don't want to leave it.
Yeah.
And gosh, give me a three-hour co-write with somebody where we get one line.
Yeah.
But I know the line is right. I want to write with that person again. I spent way too many days finishing songs that I knew when I walked out of the room I'd never get cut.
That's such a great word. I read recently a biography of Leonardo da Vinci.
Did he write a song?
Well, actually, put some musicals together. Many of the machines he designed that people think are flying machines were actually for presentations. But you've got to read the novel for
it.
Read the biography for that. But
you know a lot of just interesting stuff, don't you, Brad?
Well, I try to read. But one of the things, Mona Lisa was found in his study. Da Vinci was never finished with a painting, ever. He would pull that painting out and add just another layer, a translucent layer of a stroke of his brush. Many of his works were unfinished because he was not going to settle. It was never perfect. It was never finished. I've talked to other artists. We have an artist on our team, Josh, who's a fantastic artist, has this paintings in our galleries.
Yeah, he's got a gallery.
Josh will tell you, it's never done. And the great artist is always trying to perfect the work.
Right.
At some point, you've got to turn it in. I don't even know if this should be on the Worship Life podcast, but I heard Lauren Michaels, the great producer of Saturday Night Live for so many years, say, we don't go on the air because Saturday Night Live, the show's ready. We go on the air because it's 11:30.
Sure.
And there are times you've got to turn a song in. But this, the idea that you're never happy with it.
Right.
Even when it's hanging on the gallery
wall,
good as it can be.
I've got a story about that from our friend Greg Nelson. We've already called his name. What a great songwriter, producer.
Yeah.
Greg and I were talking about a subject similar to this one day, and of course, People Need the Lord. I think we would all agree it's a pretty good song.
Great song.
Yeah. That was written about you, wasn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, it was.
First breakfast with you.
I am a people, after all. And Greg actually said to me, and I don't know specifically what part of the song he's talking about, but there's something about that song that still bothers him to this day that he wish he could fix.
Yeah.
You know. And I'm thinking, I think it worked out. But he's like, there's one part that I wish I could have redone that part. It never did feel completely right.
But the opposite side of this discussion is something that I've seen younger writers do. That they'll let one line beat them to death and then stop the process.
Yeah.
And I tell people, man, if you've looked at it every way you know to look at it, walk away from it.
Yeah.
Fix it, love it, leave it, but walk away and come back, and you might find that there's something else that's in there.
Great piece of advice.
And another thing that has happened to me, and I'm sure this has happened to you, I had a lyric that I had in my computer for 15 years. And I asked this guy to set it to music, and he did, and it was good, but I just don't think that's it. And this guy looked at it, and another guy worked on it and brought it to a co-writing session one day, and we worked on it a little more, and that didn't feel right. I mean, 15 years.
Oh, how many years, and Dave, you may know the story, that did Mark Lowry carry around the Mary Did You Know lyric?
Well, I'd like to finish my story now,
Brad. Anyway, sorry, I was going to go to a more famous song.
And finally, last year.
So you wrote Mary Did You Know? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. Well, last year, I finally was in a co-write with John Darren Rousey, and I hadn't thought about the song in a long, long, long time. We were writing a musical, and we needed a song in this spot that would say something about this, and my mind went, that's it.
I think it was the producer that made that happen.
That might have been it. And I went back and grabbed that song and put it in that spot, and now finally the song lives.
No, it was a great song.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's what happens. I mean, that's what songwriters would do. They, I don't know. It is a little bit of that, whatever that mindset that Da Vinci's talking about, like it's never finished. You just kind of, you do carry
not,
that. There's
not
no
settling, but
carry.
At some point you got to turn it in.
Sure.
And then trust God to do things with it.
As opposed to trusting a publisher.
Amen. Amen. Amen.
Hey, you may not know that Lifeway Music is now available through all your favorite streaming platforms. You can find us on Spotify, Pandora, YouTube Music, Amazon Music, Napster, Apple Music, SoundCloud. Wherever you're streaming music, you're going to find Lifeway Worship content. We have everything from scripture songs to the top 100 worship songs. You choose the platform and just search for the musical artist Lifeway Worship and you'll find our content there. We've already experienced over 1 million streams and we just launched recently. We'd love for you to be a part of that. So if you're looking for great music on your favorite streaming platforms, great Christian content, search for Lifeway Worship, find our set list, and we think you're going to love what you hear.
Well, these are great words. Now, you talked a little bit about what makes a song. This intrigued me, Dave, a comment you said earlier. What are the things that make a song not great, maybe? Or what are those things that writers need to watch out for? You said in your own life early on, it's kind of force in the rhyme, that kind of thing. Are there other things that you guys have noticed, particularly in the worship world, that you'd like to see writers avoid, pitfalls? I know we could all point to songs that are number one on CCLI that probably break some of these rules, and that's a given. But what are some things you would like, a message you'd like to pass along to a young songwriter? Watch out for these.
First of all, I would say, yes, there are successful songs that break the rules. But if you look at the credits on those songs, those are usually written by people that are performers or artists that have a way of validated. Because they sing it, so we better accept that.
That's a great
and they
point.
May not get that song. You may never have heard it if they hadn't had a platform to deliver it.
That's probably true.
Great word.
You respected them as an artist.
And their artistry, like I said a minute ago, a unbelievable singer can sell an average song.
Yes.
But the problem is it doesn't translate into my church because Natalie Grant's not coming to do the solo on that.
You know, right.
I'm not thinking of any of her particular songs right now. Yeah. But, I mean, that kind of voice doesn't come with the song. You know, I want to answer your question, and then I'll let Dave answer it the way he wants to. The thing that I keep finding myself calling out from writers over and over and over again is I want to hear something that's unique.
Sure. Yeah.
I just want to hear something that's unique.
Absolutely.
I want to hear something I haven't heard like that before.
Or feel something I haven't felt.
Yeah.
I
mean, just give me something that's different. Because what I'm hearing in modern songs especially is the same approaches and even content and even structure. It's almost like we are imitating each other right now in Christian music. And that concerns me greatly. We need some writers to write some unique material.
So can I call one out and you guys can tell me I'm wrong? You probably will. But the one right now that resonates with me with what you're talking about, Mike, is that Is He Worthy? That's just
no question.
Different than
sure.
what
I've haven't
been,
heard that said
what
like
I've
that.
Been hearing yeah. and the call and response to bring that kind of a feeling yeah. back to it
and the fact
the
that
chords it's just it's a
you
cool.
know, the passage in Revelation is not written call and response. It is written statement wise. He is yeah. worthy to receive da da da. But the writer, the artist, Andrew Peterson in this case,
yeah.
the songwriter actually creatively says the truth of Revelation, but does it in a creative way that's not really ever been done quite like that before, and which is why it catches
sure.
our attention. It's true, and there are a lot of songs that talk about "Behold the Lamb" and "Worthy is the Lamb,"
right?
Which is, and they're all true, but what his stands out is because it's very unique in how he does
it. Oh yeah, "Worthy" is one of my favorite Christian lyrics, yeah. and any song that has it, I'm probably going to want to sing it in church. But that's one that just recently stands out. That's just
great
different.
Example.
It's just different.
Great example.
But you know, part of what you're describing is the sameness. I was in a session about a month ago, and I won't tell you any of the names till we go offline. But we were struggling because they had added the song to a project, and we did not have a pre-clearance on it yet. And that's a publishing thing. But
yeah,
and so I'm saying you can't cut this until we get the rights. And somebody said, it's okay if we go ahead and cut it. It's a common enough chord progression that if we don't get the rights...
Oh, my soul.
And part Dave. Of me died.
Dave.
Because he was right.
Oh.
We can just swap other words for it because it all sounds the same.
Oh, gosh, that hurts.
Well, sure it does.
That hurts.
But I know how we
Man,
got here.
We've lost something.
Because I've been in too many co-writes that with writers that I never wrote with again because the first thing they said in the co-write was, let's write something that sounds like... Fill in the blank.
Yeah.
And I'm going, well, geez,
yeah.
you don't need me here. Just write that.
I mean, that's one of the things I want to say. When I hear a song, very often my first response is, boy, that reminds me of.
Yeah, what does that sound like?
Sure.
And that's when you go.
And it's hard, but I hear, I mean, behalf of all amateur songwriters out there, there's only, what, functionally 12 notes, right?
Yeah.
And there's only, I mean, the
but
chord
you know
progressions that their ear likes to hear.
You've said it, so let me just tell you. Yeah. You've got to start listening to music outside your genre.
Right.
You've got to start reading novels with using words you don't use in your sentences.
Yeah, you talked about getting out of music. I was thinking about some ways to get more descriptive in your writing and the way you have to expand. I'd love to know, Dave, some of the things that you've studied in your life that you think have helped you become a more expansive writer. I was thinking about Plato's Republic and that book. You know, these things were just orally passed down from generation to generation to generation, and often there was kind of a melodic thing to it, and the vivid description of it, we know now more about memory, helped it be more memorable.
Sure.
So that the poet could remember the poem and
yes.
tell the story. So what are some things that you guys might have studied outside of traditionally just listening to songs and songwriters instead of let me listen to the Gaithers and find out what a great song is or talk to Ben Spear? What are some things outside of even music that you think a young songwriter should look into that might help expand their vocabulary,
expressiveness? For me, you got to be aware of what moves you.
Yeah.
Because what moves me might be different than what moves you. And the thing, the greatest lesson I've learned all through the years is that when I am aware of what moves me, and when I sense it, I chase it, I pursue it relentlessly, and see why it moved me. Because a lot of people go, "Well, yeah, I like that. That made me cry, or that raised why."
Yeah,
the why is what will take you to the better song.
Yeah,
and good. You know, yes, I listen to things. I want to know what my kids are listening to because I want to understand what moves that generation.
That's good.
Because I have to be aware of trends at my age. And the other thing is I always pray that God will let me hear things that nobody's saying.
Yeah.
That's
now,
good.
Yeah. Sometimes that's literally, sometimes it's, we had a number one song years and years ago. Larnell Harris was on his way to my house to write. We didn't have anything we were going to work on, but I had the radio on while he was on his way there. And I heard a song called... There Stands the Cross.
Mm.
And I thought, boy, that's a good title. And then I found out at the end of the song, the DJ rattled off the name of the song, and I had heard it wrong. It was There Stands the Cross. Or vice versa, I don't remember what
yeah,
it was. But,
yeah.
but when he got there, I said, hey, let's write the other one.
I heard
what wasn't said, which at my age happens
yeah, that,
a lot.
That happens a whole lot. You should be writing more songs then.
Well, I've lost enough hearing to write the next 20 years.
Dave, I love it when you talked about see what moves other people.
Yes.
A couple illustration came immediately to my mind. I remember hearing Andre Crouch talk about writing The Blood Will Never Lose Its Power. And you can look this up on the internet and tell me I'm wrong. I believe he was 17. And he tells a story of crumbling the song up and throwing it in the wastebasket. And it was his sister who pulled it out and said, no, Andre, that's a good song.
Yeah.
And sometimes it does take, I think that's another good thing. Don't let it just be your ear.
Right.
Run it by other people. You
yeah.
might miss something. I know a famous song in town, and I won't tell the story, but of a guy who heard a song, a big industry mogul, didn't move him much at all. His wife, he was picking his wife up. She got in the car and was crying.
Sure.
And he said, we've got to do something with the song.
Yeah.
Not because it even moved him, but it
right.
moved her.
Yeah.
And you trust the people. And part of my whole deal is you try to raise that awareness with the people in your vicinity.
Mm.
So the best song critic I have is, she wouldn't want me to say it that way, but the one I trust the most, her instincts, is my wife. We've been
yeah.
married nearly 40 years. She'll pick out things in my writing where I might have settled for a little less. She'll call me on it.
You know, I've been around Cindy enough with you to, I have no doubts that she'd call you on it. There's no question in my mind.
Mark Harris and I wrote a musical years ago, I wrote the whole musical lyrics only and sent it to him. He was on the road. He went back to the room every night, wrote the melody, and sent me the... So the musical gets recorded. It, big musical, Bradley Knight did the arrangement of it. And I'm playing it one day at the house. And there was one line in one song that Mark had to change to make it fit the music. It was the only line he wrote in the whole thing. And she's working in the room and it's playing. And it gets that line and she goes, wow. That's a great line. I went, are you kidding me? That's the only words he wrote in the whole thing. But yes.
Well, you know my famous story about Teresa, the song that I wrote with Niles and Luke, It's Still the Cross, has a bridge in it. Some may say it's man's religion or ancient history, but the cross of Jesus still remains the price for sin. And I'm in the next room playing all of that. The price for sin. Da-da-da-da. And I'd go back and play the whole bridge again. And da-da-da. Oh, shoot. And Teresa's in the kitchen, and she hollers out, "That sets us free." And I went, "That sets us free. It's still..." And then it goes, and then it made it modulate awesome. All that. So Teresa actually wrote that.
I didn't notice her name on the credit there.
Well, you know, that's interesting you say that, because she asked, she said, "My name's not on the song." And I said, "Your last name's on it."
There you go.
And,
wow. I like
you
it.
Know, so, that's a good line. So there like you go. It. Yeah. I wasn't going to pull that. My wife gets part of, gets a third of the song.
No, we don't want to go near there.
No, yeah, that's another podcast. That. We've got too many. Well, listen, guys, we've come up on... this will be the end of part two of our time with Dave Clark, so that we don't have a, as you know, Mike, some of our listeners like to exercise listening to the podcast.
And just,
this
somebody's just passed out.
unless they're training for a marathon.
Slow down the treadmill.
So this will probably be the end of part two. But we would love to hear from you. You can email us, worship@lifeway.com. We'd love to hear your songwriting stories, what moves you, what you like about what's happening in Christian music today, what you don't. Also, guests you'd like to see on the program. More than anything, we want to know how to pray for you, specifically your church and your ministry. So let us know how we can do that.
I do want to correct. I want to confirm something David said.
Yes.
He said that I don't, the same thing that moves him doesn't move me. And I want to give a perfect example of that.
Okay.
He likes the Detroit Tigers, and I can't stand them.
So well, you haven't seen their record this year.
Oh,
so
I have.
It's been a tough year to be a fan.
Yeah, exactly.
That's another thing you can share with us. It's your favorite baseball team or sporting team. No, we do want to hear from you. Join us at the Worship Life blog as well, and we need to get Dave to do some more blogs for us there at worshiplife.com.
Yep.
And then social media, whether you like Instagram, Facebook,
and
Twitter,
you know what? Let's throw
is,
this. Let's throw this plug out there too. Dave has a site called Dave Clark Writes.
Dave Clark Writes,
and his Instagram account. And all of that. Watch what this guy's writing, the pictures he posts. You'll get some good song ideas following Dave Clark. You will.
Amen.
Sometimes you post stuff because you need to remember.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
So, it's mainly just to encourage writers.
Yeah, that's right. Dave Clark Writes.
Thank you for letting me be a part of this today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, until next time for the Worship Life Podcast with Mike Harlan, this is Brian Brown saying thanks for joining us. We'll be back together to talk about music and worship ministry very soon.